Let's bring Johnny back into the circle. He always called it the nonstop love-in. And that's exactly what it's like. It's just beautiful humans meeting human to human. And it's a true love fest. And so if you get, let's see, if you get on our newsletter, then you would be informed of when those happen as well.
Well, great. Thank you so much. We've been talking tonight with Blue, with Denise, with Carla, with Prabhu. Thank you so much, all of you, for joining us tonight on Prison Pipeline.
Hi, this is Emma Lugo. I am the president of the board of directors of KBOO Community Radio and also a producer on Prison Pipeline. I would just like to encourage you to real quickly give during the All Thrills, No Frills winter membership drive. You can go online and give at kboo.fm/give. And you can also send a check or money order to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214, or text 44321 and enter KBOO. Thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO is serving up a series of scintillating sounds to help get you through the home stretch of winter. It's the thrilling Volume 2 of KBOO's annual programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills. Tune in for music marathons, public affairs series, special programming days, and more. Find all the great shows listed at kboo.fm/thrills. And please support awesome programming like this by making a donation to KBOO right now. Text KBOO to the number 44321 or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and help us reach our $17,000 goal. Thank you.
Tune in to Cubby Cushy, Cubby Cush, Tuesday nights on KBOO. 2 hours of global bass with an emphasis on South Asia and the South Asian diaspora, and an even more special emphasis on the Punjabi diaspora. Hosted every Tuesday, 10 to midnight, by The Incredible Kid. This ain't world music, it's birth of a new world music.
Tune in to KBOO every fourth Friday of the month at 8 p.m. for Squirrel Snow, the show where we broadcast galactic awareness, animal awareness, where we have fascinating conversations with movers and shakers in the fields of galactic awareness and animal awareness, and we play music that can raise our frequency of consciousness. Yeah, that is Squirrel Snow every fourth Friday of the month at 8 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Spark Plug. Stunning. New sounds every other Wednesday, 3 a.m. to 5:30 a.m. Join us and get connected.
Rise them up, KBOO 90.7. You don't know it's your girl, Tasha T.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
David D. Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. A few weeks ago, there was an article in the Washington Post that talked about one of the components that really hastened and, I guess, was a festering ground, if I could use that word, for the January 6th uprising. They talked about the role of social media. They talked about how it failed to intervene, how it allowed a lot of incendiary rhetoric to run amok, and its absence and sometimes compliance with certain figures allowed the insurrection to take place. There was a 122-page report that came out that talked about some of this, and they noted that there was a reluctance of people to really dig deep and to hold the powerful tech companies' feet to the fire. I wanted to have this gentleman who is with me. His name is Quincy Phillips. He's the founder of Lighthouse Silicon Valley. He's no stranger to our airwaves. Come on and talk a little bit about that. But I wanted to extend the conversation to something that was not talked about in the January 6th article in the Post, but just the role that social media has played in general within our communities, in particular, younger generations, Black community, and Q, as I like to call Quincy, who is from Chicago, has seen the devastation of social media and how it's allowed certain things to play out. And then people will pivot and say, it must be the music, it must be the kids, and not really looking deep into the fact that if I go online right now and put up a post that says, let's celebrate Black History Month, it will see very few views. If I come back and put up a post with me holding a gun and talking about I'm going to kill my ops, it can go viral in a minute. And we need to kind of have that conversation. And I thought there would be no better person to really bring that into the fold, because you actually, you know both sides of what we're talking about. So welcome to the show, Q, and how you doing?
Man, doing well. Thanks for having me back. It's always timely when it comes to Silicon Valley and social media. So glad to be here and to wax poetic with you today.
So let's start off with the January 6th. I thought it was interesting because the argument has always been made that the far right has not gotten its fair representation on social media. They've accused Facebook of being discriminatory. They've accused TikTok of being undermining force for their values and perspectives. And everywhere you go, you hear that. Yet, this report is saying, well, some of the things that y'all are doing is because of social media. So how do we make sense of that?
You start to separate, you know, fact from fiction and the noise, right? And I think the biggest thing is what one may have portrayed early on versus the reality of what was going on all along. Right. Okay. And so I think you see a bit more of that. And I think when we poke at it and we peel back at it, we would have seen some of the same rhetoric, some of the same things that led to January 6th happening well before that. Right. Right. We've seen people in their neck of the woods still circling. Right. Whether it's black web, whether, you know, dark web or any of these other, you know, spaces that technology allows one to go into. When you want to go into a cave, you can.
Right. So there was spaces above and beyond social media where places were fostering. What was it? What did they call it? Q4?
And what's funny is we've always seen this in movies going back a couple decades, right? We've always seen people using technology and being behind the scenes doing things, right? It's just now, because of technology advancing, TikTok, like, we have a lot more and don't have to understand how to code to get into these rooms or spaces in technology that, you know, are now rampant.
So, Q, a lot of times when we talk about this, we're thinking that this is just simple messages. You know, Dave gets online and says, I don't like the government. You read it and you go, I agree with Dave, let's go. But we found over the years that there is a lot of science behind emotional manipulation. Can we talk a little bit about that? Because that is a well-heeled school, you know, how to get, how to poke the neurons and neurons or whatever words and technology they use. But that seems to be a driving force that we ignore.
Yeah. I mean, we knew about emotional intelligence before artificial intelligence, right? So it makes sense that we're seeing just a lot of that now in tech. Like, again, it's we know from music how it moves us, right? So again, that emotional intelligence, and the smarter that we get with technology, and the smarter that we see with AI, and now you're seeing our images now being able to be portraits in those things. So like the emotional intelligence is catching up with that in artificial intelligence, which then would allow technology to do what we've seen in movies or what scared us, right? In that belief of what could happen if we started to go down this path. But it's been out there. It's not new. Like, that's the one thing that I want to say. So even with this technology, people have used emotional intelligence and just infused that into another wave or medium, right? And so that's what we're seeing.
But most of us don't know that's happening, though.
That's very true. But I mean, it's what we open our eyes to, or maybe what channels, you know, we're looking at. Because again, the news does it extremely well. Fox News versus some of the others, what you right. end up seeing, what they put out there, that goes out on another platform and wavelength. So it's what happened to technology should have happened, because it's happened in any new thing that's come that we've all immersed ourselves in. The more time we put into it, the more energy. The thing with technology is just faster. It gets out quickly. You know, we might have had to wait another year, you know, for these words to then come out and reach as many as it did 20 years ago.
As you were talking, I was thinking like, oh, wow, there was probably a time that people say, you watch too much TV, it's going to influence you a certain way. In fact, right. I'm just thinking about how Michael Frani, you know, popular artist here in the Bay, put out a song about television, talking about turn it off, it's going to influence you. But then I'm sure we could go back and it's like, what sort of radio are you listening to? And then we had the movies, Birth right. of a Nation. So that's always been there, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I guess maybe the question that we might be avoiding, not me and you, but just in the conversation, is when I think of the type of, I'll use the word propaganda, that has been used to dehumanize large swaths of the population, ultimately is rooted in anti-blackness. Am I wrong to think of it that way? And does it rear its head even in these social media constructs? We're looking at January 6th, but I say in the back of all this, right, this need to, you know, usurp the government, anti-blackness is somewhere in the middle of all that, you know, the driving force, even if it's not particularly articulated. And so from that standpoint, is it wrong to look at that long thorough line from, say, let's just say we're talking about technology, the cinematic advances of Birth of a Nation, when people were like, and look at how they put this film together, right? And it was it was awestruck. It was like watching Avatar, you know, in terms of how they did it. To now, you know, where you know it's the artificial intelligence that you were talking about. Can we dig into that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, that line, you know, is definitely still there, and when it comes to the blackness, somehow it comes to have and have nots. A little more that we receive, or a little more that we get, then on their algorithm side, turns worse, right? Like, yeah, I would say that, yeah, that line of blackness being at the core, it's key, you know.
Anti-blackness.
Of America. Anti-blackness, right? Right? Yes, it is key, especially in the history of America, and it just gets magnified, right? Like, we try to hide it in terms of have and have nots, but at the root of it, we continue to see that anti-blackness. And one can look as as close or as far away as to see just who you saw there and who you didn't see.
Right.
And a rhetoric that came afterwards.
So you're in Silicon Valley. Is the climate like that? Is it overt? And I'm asking because I remember when things start to pop in Silicon Valley, it was young, ambitious kids, had the world in front of them. And in many ways, you would think that they would be naturally aligned with other young, ambitious folks who were getting into music and entertainment, right? And then suddenly it just seemed to be a switch, right? There seemed to be a hostility that emerged. It's like, I'm coming to gentrify your neighborhood. You know, I don't like you. Why are you here? I don't know if that was always there, but it just seemed like what should have been a natural alignment because of age and generation, and even what people culturally may have embraced, hip hop, for example, just seemed to be on two separate worlds. So you're down there in the belly of the beast. What is it like? Who's the driving force? How rampant is, you know, anti-blackness? How rampant is anti-establishment / government, you know, forces?
Yeah, I would say in Silicon Valley, the anti-blackness isn't in your face. Right. You know, like that. I would say what's in your face is billions of dollars. Great. And so you see diversity in a different way, right? One can come into Silicon Valley and then see a swath of different types of Asians, you know, and others. And so what I see is,
and that would be considered diversity then.
And that would be considered diversity, right? That
with no black, with no brown, or it'd be a different brown.
It could be a different brown, right?
East Indian versus
yes,
Chicano, right. And right, okay,
right. Which, if you look at the community surrounding those texts, whether it's Sunnyvale or Mountain View, some of those cities where most of the tech are headquartered, also look like, you know, that new employee or that current employee of tech. So that, say, the anti-blackness, it gets washed by the diversity. But I would say what you see again is when people get more, like when there's excess, when there's wealth, there also becomes a little bit of complacency. Life is good around here. Right. My friends, those who work in tech typically bring their other friends into tech. Mm-hmm. So tech has come. People can talk about old boy network and those things. Tech is just, again, Revenge of the Nerds that we saw on the movie. Now it's graduated. So it's a fraternity and a sorority here.
Right.
And so that's the makeup. That's the feel of it. You will see in boardrooms. You will see, you know, as you walk on a campus, the lack of blackness, right? Definitely apparent. But the feeling, even as a black man on that campus, what you walk away from is not the lack of blackness, but the excess. You're in that world, and it's hard to think about the South Side of Chicago when there's a chef or someone serving you, when there are buses that will transport you all across the Bay Area. So you even get lost in it. And that main feeling, it's not there in Silicon Valley the same way one might think it is on the outside looking in.
I ran into some of your contemporaries the other night at a dinner, and I was talking to them about the layoffs in Silicon Valley, and they pulled me to the side, said, let me give you some perspective on that. Said it's headline news. Ain't nobody starving. You know, they might have laid off 5 or 10,000 people, but that is just a drop in the bucket to the tens of thousands that are employed. So there's like, oh, you know, Google laid off 10,000 people, but they have 200,000 people, or
yes,
you know. So it wasn't really a shockwave, if I may.
Yes,
right?
That's correct. That was my old team too. 12,000 that was laid off. The entire team that I worked with at my time at Google was a part of that.
Wow.
Right.
So did it change the landscape at all, or just?
You know what I've told folks, especially if you're looking at tech and looking at the excess, looking at philanthropy or any of those things, as our economy goes, you're going to see these layoffs because tech is going to go back to just what it is, tech. Right. And what you've seen in Google and a lot of Silicon Valley is folks, they had some more, so they started to do a bit more, whether it's DEI stuff, let's put some money out there, let's do this, let's get into development, even though we're technology, let's actually look at the built environment, affordable housing, buildings, those things. Now, what you're seeing is the removal of all of that.
The extracurriculum activity.
Exactly, which is to me the soul. The things that made Google and makes tech a bit better is now going to be taken away. So you're not going to expect Google to be putting out the hundreds of billions or hundreds of millions that they've been, you know, putting it out. You're not going to see additional huge funds being raised for equity. No, they're going back to tech. So those pieces in excess, great. Google started to do a little bit more. Cool. Mm-hmm. But now that little bit more, taken back. That's the reality of tech.
Quincy Phillips, the executive director of Lighthouse Silicon Valley, is our guest this afternoon. I want to come back to this isolation. You didn't use that word, but I'm going to use it. You're on a campus, it's billions, you can get isolated, which I guess some would say is anti-blackness. You might chalk it up and say is either blissful ignorance or lack of empathy. And I'm asking because from where you sit, do people look and say, wow, this platform that I'm helping run, you know, through, you know, whatever various jobs I have, these guys are putting guns up and having feuds and going all out against each other. Let me gatekeep that and shut that down and maybe raise up something else. The January 6th, as they were talking in the reports, you're sitting there and you're looking and saying, wow, this could really lead to some crazy stuff. Let me intervene. How does that not happen? Is it because of people just not caring, blissful ignorance, or is there some other power that's like, nah, we actually make a lot of money off this? You know, little Johnny from the O block in Chicago beefing with little Sonny on the B block in Gary or someplace, you know, that sort of energy, you know, you know, kicks into a whole bunch of formulas we have that makes money. You know, the angst that people have against the government to the point that they want to commit violence, it's a moneymaker for us. Let's keep it going. Is that how they see it, or am I missing something?
I would not be surprised if there were certain tech companies that did that. I think you're seeing some of that with Twitter now, where it seems to make more financial sense. Like if things are based on quantitative rather than qualitative, so the numbers versus the story, then you could see tech being skewed for that interest and for, you know, the profits that come from it, whether it's sponsorship and those things. And so we're going to have to see with some of those companies if it's like that. I think at places like Google, different from a place like Facebook, which is a platform that, you know, has that, I would say Google, because they are more in the business of, say, cloud services, and they make their money that way, Google feels a bit different. Now, you can get into search engine and search engine optimization.
But there's conversations about what shows up in search, right?
Right.
Right. And so can't there be an intervention, or is that...
So for the search, you know, part of it, it's that same thing that we're talking about where the government, you know, they're suing Google right now. All right. Well, where they're supposed to spend their money on, right? So if you put a team, if the world is going to end and things are going bad, and now you're asking the people with the most money to then put their money out to help everywhere, then you could have a situation where, say, the tech, like I'll be interested to see if Google and the search engine optimization and those things start to change now that they're more focused on their tech, they're hearing it, they're seeing the lawsuits and those things. So you end up having to pay more. Like, oh, this is the barrier, this is my pain point, then let me address that with this type of cash. But before, Google's pain points were the world's, you know, pain points. So I can see anyone's point right now of like, where they put money to. I would say Facebook in terms of tech, like, and when we get into the stories that go out there, there's a bit more content creation and the opportunity for that, which then technology and artificial intelligence can take over the search engine part. Right. So to me, Google can get caught into something if they didn't spend the money on putting all those boundaries up, right? Because there's other platforms with content that people are running the score up, right? You know, that's right. How we see it. The search engines and all of those things on Twitter, what's trending. If people keep going to that, there's not much that a search engine can do to stop it. Like right, if you got right. a million people at your door, it's going to open.
So they're playing the money game, whatever the demand is.
Yeah, well, and as I see it, and from my place, I see it as everyone playing their part. The government is just as guilty as Google for what right. ends up happening because of all of the capitalism part, right? Oh, okay, you can't get monopolies. You can't do this, you can't do that, which then forces funding to go to fight those things. Or you're telling me where you want me to show up in order to make this deal better, in order for me to sit in this place and be tech, then here's what I have to pay, right? Okay. And that's happened in government, in our companies and organizations for as long as we've been around. Government is getting a little bit smarter now when they see the folks who have more money. Happens in sports, happens in entertainment. Now it's happening in the tech as well.
It sounds like at the end of the day, those who are consumers are at the mercy of those who are, you know, setting the table.
Spot on.
So the other day I spoke to a group of students and I asked them, you know, what weapons are you constructing to fight the war that we are dealing with? You know, the attacks that are relentless, that are coming against us. And I describe war as just understanding that there is rampant anti-blackness, there is blissful ignorance, and there are a lot of people, some of them who may have your skin tone, who don't care, right? What I'm hearing and seeing, I'm saying, wow, I just, you know, looked at the paper the other day and some 20-year-old, you know, developed some AI program that is going to be revolutionary in terms of what it's able to execute. And I'm saying, you all are 19 and 20, what are you all developing right now? And so I want to ask you, because you sit in the middle of that, are we actively developing, not necessarily to the confines and constraints that the Silicon Valley would say, but do you see our creativity coming up with mousetraps that ideally would work for us and be liberating and do the things that we say we ultimately want? Or are people still looking and saying, I want to get a piece of this billion? How can I move my creativity in that direction? Which ultimately makes you a consumer versus somebody who is creating a better mousetrap or platform. Where do we stand on that as Black folks?
Man, I'm so glad you're in front of these students, because that's literally the question they need to be asked. Are they, you know, for the money, or, you know, are they for change that you know, Sam Cooke sang about, right?
Right.
So for me, what I see, the majority is about the money. But I will say that there are, you know, some who are trying to change. I actually have a fellow who actually came from England, but by way of Nigeria, who's over there, like one of the top, but has the second study, pioneering study on artificial intelligence and racial biases.
Wow.
This is the second. And so now we've brought it to Silicon Valley. We're about to launch it. You know, we got some convening coming up.
So that's a solution.
Zainab Garba Sanaa, yes. So she's gone into it thinking about health equity. Like, so everybody can go about in different spaces. So in this case, in artificial intelligence and the biases, if your phone can't, if you don't trust your phone taking a picture of you to make you look that way, right, or to look the way you think you look, you're not going to trust health and anything else to give you all the things you now need, right, that the world is going into. So she's doing a pioneering study first to say, like, hey, this doesn't even work. Like, Black people and brown people aren't even using this. So your technology, because our lack of use, is never going to get to, you know, where it needs to be. So yes, I will say that there are some folks who are definitely doing some of this good work, but they're far and few between. Like, again, I had to go be a partner in England for the National Health Society over in England to bring that to Silicon Valley. And it's the second study of any kind around artificial intelligence and race.
Walk us through the steps that you feel people need to take to move in that direction. You know, like I said, I'm trying to remember the guy's name. East Indian cat, 20 years old, like the sister you just mentioned, was just written about in the New York Times about, you know, pioneering some artificial intelligence and, you know, basically, you know, like had this community in mind and they would be off and running. And I'm sitting there going, well, damn, you know, Leroy down the street knows how to flip my iPhone. You know, Ray Ray up the block can get me free cable and get me a box. Those acts are criminalized and they can go to jail, right? But there's right. still a creative aspect to it, right?
Right.
Even the way that people have used their creativity on these platforms, whether it's dances, you know, whether it's right. the way that they do videos in a way that has, you know, revolutionized and forced these companies to maybe readjust so that they can make money. But the question is, what are the steps that you feel need to be taken so that our folks are creating platforms that everybody else has to come to? Not just the content, but they're like, oh, wow, Q got something that's better than TikTok. It's Blick Block, you know, or something like that. You know, like the sister got something that, you know, is going to be better than, you know, Facebook's health thing. You got, now she got a health thing for Black folks, right? You know, so when do you see a line of us, or what do you think, what steps can somebody practically take to start creating these tools or weapons and what have you for our community?
I would say, first of all, landscape and be intentional. First, we see what's out there. You know, our youth right now, sometimes we just think that we're about to make something up, right? Like something that hasn't been created. And then we do a little research and know that it has, right?
Right.
So let's go to something else. So I would say that the same way that I have Zainab, who has dealt with sickle cell for her entire life, right?
Right.
And has seen the advances of technology, still not changed that.
Right.
Gets her further into, oh, where's the disconnect? What things can make my life easier? And once you find that intentionality, not something that everybody else is doing, do not go where everybody else is. What's the thing that's affecting you as a Black person?
Right.
If there's something affecting you as a Black person, go dig into that. The cheat code from there is to go to research. Even if you're not a college student, take your idea to some of the research institutions around the country, right? And that,
well,
that
I don't think people know that they are research institutions. So walk us through that. So I have an idea. I go, I want to stop people from stealing catalytic converters, right? Listen, that's a practical thing, right? I have an idea. You know, I want to have a cage that drops down as soon as you walk by, right? Can't get it, right? Or I want to create a metal that you can't, you know, circular saw can't cut through. So I have an idea. You say go to a research thing, right? Berkeley, Stanford?
The first thing you do, so say with that catalytic converter, when I said it's intentional, something that's affecting you, take that, turn it into a story. Do not turn it into data. Turn it into a story that people can connect to. Remember the emotional intelligence that we started to talk about early. Go there. So when you start to talk about your pain and all of those things, what's the story? And then what's the thing that you've thought of? People connect there. That connection, that story, that emotional intelligence that you now have will point you in the direct, when I say a research institution, it could be a university. So it could be a Stanford. It can be one of those well-endowed, Cal, Berkeley, Northwestern, my alma mater. It can be one of those places, which is a research institution. But also when we're looking at tech, we sometimes see these other little company names, Biomed, blah, like that. That's a research institution as well. They might only have 50 employees, right? But that research institution actually has the dollars to do and move the work. So can when we say I, federal government,
in, yeah. Can I walk in the door of these things? Will people take my ideas and go, this is a good idea, we'll get back to you, and then they run with it? I mean, how do I do that dance?
Well, first, your story, that emotional, that's why I say, do not go in the business plan and people do all of that stuff. That stuff gets taken. Okay. Those are the things that get saying, like, yeah, you're supposed to make a business plan. But when you do all of that, you're literally giving someone that.
And the formula.
They're giving you a check, yeah, then you're doing that. The storytelling, the qualitative type of emotional intelligence cannot be taken. So, you know, a white person may not have the same understanding of their cattle. Maybe they can now in the Bay Area of right. a catalytic converter, but I'm from Chicago. That was happening to me 30 years ago, right?
Right.
You know, my first car is just like, oh man, you know the sound, right? So right. you and I are doing this story right now that we then take. So I would take what I just said. Oh, this is 30 years old. I know the sound that come out. Oh man, you know, Aki got me for my side mirror too, right?
Right.
You know, like those types of stories are the things you take and cannot be removed. There'd
right.
be someone in that institution, that research institution, find your way. We do this in church. We do this in our school. Find your way to that one sympathetic voice
mm-hmm.
and you work that magic. Don't give up. It's more than one research institution. Some of them are going to give you cheat codes, right? When you walk in there, you walk into a place, they'll tell you no, ask them why.
Hmm.
They'll give you something. Go to where they said. Go to whatever that something is. That refines your pitch. That gets you into the next door. But if you're out here in Silicon Valley, hit me up. So I'll be one of those people, and I can give you my email to say, like, if you're
right.
one of those folks, you want to know how to get into a research institution or what research institutions are available, especially when we're thinking about this type of things with technology, come to me. I will point you in the right,
right.
direction.
Let me just say something. Last time we had you on, you did give people a major cheat code. You told them how they can get all kinds of certificates.
Yeah.
And you told you I didn't know. You was like, man, you can go to these schools for free, damn near. And you gave like
yep.
all that stuff. There were some people that took advantage and others that sat around and said, I don't understand what we can do. And I was like, yo, dude just came on and told you how you can. At that time, it was Google. I don't know if they're still
yeah.
doing it. Like,
and if they are doing it. And if they would have started back then, they would have already 90 days later had a six-figure job. Right?
Right.
Those are the things that are not getting let go.
Right.
Because like I said, Google is going back to what it knows. Tech is going back to what it knows and what it is doing. So those types of jobs, yep, free courses, Google is training them. Go on blog.google. That's it. Blog.google. Now don't add a .com or anything like that. Find everything you need to know about Google and the resources. They're there.
Cheat code number one.
Definitely.
Well, that's cheat code number two, because you said the first one is don't give your business plan, but give your story.
Work yeah, give on your story.
Right. You know, do we have to kind of train ourselves not to limit our imagination? That seems to be a scenario that I think is the result of years and years of this industry training us to be consumers and not innovators, if that's making sense. So I'm sitting there yes. going, oh man, you know, when is Facebook going to make a better platform versus the hustle mentality that I think in theory we should all have if we're from Oakland, New York, Chicago, and we're coming from the quote unquote inner city, the hood, right, where you have to be
right.
resourceful. The thinking should be, huh, this platform is pretty good. You know what? I can do a better one, and I'm going to do a better one. I'm going to make that crack. A lot of people ain't thinking that way anymore, and that seems by design, not by accident. How do we break out of that limitations that we've, you know, have put on us or put ourselves into without realizing?
Man, this has been the hardest thing for me to even try to figure out, especially as generations change, because again, to your point, I'm not cut from that cloth. Like, we got to go get it. You wanted to make everything better, right? Like, we were back there. We invented the remix, right? Like, you wanted, you know.
Right. Let me just give somebody an idea what I mean by that, just to kind of, I remember, you know, like, I'll use my mother-in-law, for example. Comes in, looks at, you know, some facade that is on a building, takes some pictures, is like, yeah, we can build that ourselves. Ain't getting no contractor. You know, we know how to cut the wood, we know how to do that, and we'll literally like go back and be like, we'll build our own, you know, garage port yeah. or whatever it is, right? And I've seen other people do that. I've seen them look and be like, oh, okay, dude got a fancy car with the wheels, we'll go make our own fancy car with the hydraulics, right? That was what the sideshows were all about. And so that whole mentality seems to have
disappeared for a lot of people, you know, of looking and saying, I can remix this. You started to say that I can remix this myself and do better.
Yep. Yeah, we don't, I mean, and I think that's the tough part we're in with this generation right now, because without that, everybody else is going to do it, and then we're going to be further back, right? People are already doing the remix, right? They're going to remix Facebook to turn it into Instagram, to remix Instagram Reels to turn it into TikTok, right? Like, all it is are graduated remixes in technology, and then if you get the hype, man, you get your spliff star, you get, you know, any of that in there, it takes off. We know this, but we are not doing it. And the resources are there, right? Like I can't say that they're not. Can we find them? Do we need more access? Do we need the tools? Yeah, we need to make sure people got laptops. Like we're still not, when I talk about hierarchy of needs, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, foundation, safety, until we're at love and belonging, until we're there as our foundation, we can't reach esteem, right? We can't even get to self-actualization because we keep going back to our safety at the end of the day. So if we can somehow, I don't know if it's coming together, fix some of the social parts of it, the social services, meaning like housing, the things that keep us from going to school, right? Or staying in a two-year course. Like if we fix some of those issues, if you're in the Bay Area, I understand if you need to take you 5 hours to go to work and then to a job, you might not go to the second job or the third job, or you might even say, you know what, I should be going to school, but because of these other societal issues, I can't. So that's the only thing right now that I am empathetic to, understanding that society and where we are continues to be at a basic fundamentals, needing to get our safety before love and belonging, and until we're there. But
there's a lot of people that aren't trying to survive day by day, that are just a consumeristic as everybody else. In fact, I would say those who have the least probably come up with a lot more innovative stuff than you think. You know what I'm saying? You know, you know, some of our houses population learned a long time ago they don't need a gas generator. You know, they use other things that people going, oh, I never thought you could use batteries, you know, and they've been knowing how to do that, right? But, you know, but their dire conditions made them have to become resourceful, and that should be nurtured. Ideally, that innovativeness should be, you know, should have a seat at the table with them being able to move it from point A to point B. But with that being said, there's a lot of folks that have not, that are more focused on how can I create content and use that part of the brain, which then is consumed by these outlets and then left without you getting paid, versus going, let me create the platform to house my creativity. And that seems to be a little bit more daunting task, but it almost sounds like
LaRussell, right? LaRussell is going about, Chance the Rapper, LaRussell, right? He's going about that way of, let me create my own new platform, right? Let me have folks. So there are some, like, I don't know why they aren't more. Even when you see it, that hustle is hard. Most definitely, right? Having people in your backyard, you're going to have to do some uncomfortable things, but he's made it work. And now you see it. He's using that type of hustle and drive to break into tech, which is what he did. Because in his music platform, that's part tech. Let's not just think it's these other things. Like, he broke in and he's paving a way, but who's following? Because we don't see many people following what he's doing. We didn't see many people follow Chance.
Right.
To stay that independent path and go there. It's like, okay, so we got Chance, and then Chance now becomes LaRussell. I'm hoping LaRussell becomes a choir rather than another one-off, right?
So it seems like when you see that hustle, people go, man, that's kind of hard, man. You got to sacrifice, and we're in an age of instant gratification, which is a offshoot of the nurturing and the training that these tech companies have positioned us into. Like, I need that that shot of immediacy, when it's like, you're not going to get to meet us. It might take you a few days. Let's work, you know, go the few days. But what I started to say, that it's probably a necessity at this point. If we don't walk up that hill, you know, the muscles are going to atrophy and, you know, the breath is going to get short and we're going to get sick if we don't, if we don't push ourselves. No,
you are right. You're definitely, and that's why you also see when we hear our peaks, we come back down with a valley. So you might see some of us and you're like, oh my gosh, this is new and tech. Let's now go in. And then a few years later, because of that, like actually all the other things, like it's hard to be in tech by yourself, right? Like it is. It's, you could be in there and I might not see another Black person for like 2 weeks, right? And but when I see them, I'm energized to be like, okay, there's another one and let's get more. But most won't. You know, I've seen it. They're like, you know what? I can't deal with this. They're turning it into whatever, whatever they're feeling. I'm not saying it's right or indifferent, but they will eventually walk away. Right?
How much of it is really about forming a team?
I think that's the biggest thing. It's collective. That's the only way we can make it. If you're by yourself, you're just going to forget. Right? They're going to treat you better, or you're going to think that they're treating you better you're the one.
All the people that you know of, they all started off in teams. You hear the stories like, oh, I was in my garage and I created YouTube, and I was over here just tinkling around and I created Apple. But when you dig down, they had a partner, they had friends. It wasn't just one person. Even Facebook was a group of people, right? So, right. But we've been led to believe it's just this sole rugged individual by themselves. No, you got a team.
Never. I mean, Google isn't started without Stanford and the government. Right, federal contract and a Stanford grant. That type of infrastructure allows Google to become Google. Then you don't have to worry about an office when you got these things, or you got a guaranteed federal contract. You know, so again, Google had help. So yeah, the two being students and younger and thinking through this thing were at Stanford.
Okay.
All of the folks, you know, around, the professors they can go to. Google didn't start like in some incubator that everybody really thinks. Like, no. The incubator was Stanford, a research institution, going back to what I was talking about earlier, right? Find money, find the connections, get that support. Then they all come out. Stanford still owns a slice of Google.
Oh, wow.
What are we talking about? Right? Because they were incubated there. So it's like, Stanford's going to continue to get that right into his endowment, and now they get wealthier.
Right.
And have the desire to do it again. Stanford is our partner in that artificial intelligence, the pioneering thing that with Zainab. Stanford is my research partner.
Okay. We've been talking with Quincy Phillips, Lighthouse Silicon Valley. Let me come back to where we started, you know, these platforms fostering, in this case, the Washington Post article, you know, violence, and we kind of alluded to what goes on in our communities with that. I think when we go full circle, we're just looking at the fact that moving our minds in a particular mindset is a goal that we have to break if we're not in control of that. Would I be right in saying that? And you kind of gave us some steps that we can take to move in another direction. I'm going to let you kind of close off and maybe give people a couple of more cheat codes that they could follow so we can, you know, move things in 2023 in another direction, including how they can get a hold of you.
Yeah, man, I would say, well, first of all, thank you for the time and this opportunity. But I would say the first thing, especially as we're talking about, you know, what brought us here, January 6th, the insurrection in tech. Somebody sign up to be a Black person to figure this out, right? It won't, to figure out, like, why is it us? Like, why is so much of what happens in search engines and all of that optimization comes to affect Black people and harm Black folks? There's a place for you, because in tech, they're not asking that question.
Right.
They're not internalizing this. They're thinking about something else. What's a way that I can get my favorite card to the top? Right. We're going to think about our own interests. So a cheat code for someone who wants to come in here, there's a place. I'm sure most of tech would be like, wait, there's Black folks who are really interested in helping us solve this issue? Come. So my first cheat code, there's a place for you in that space. If we want to come and try to defeat this, it's going to take us being in tech to defeat right. it, not the ones who are already there. The other thing that I would say is we move forward and being connected, moving into 2023. Again, our story, no matter what the internet and social media, content is the thing that moves all of that. If we can band together and create more and more content, really start thinking through our dances, right? Really start Lil Uzi Vert. I just want to rock. I wish I would have connected with him earlier so I can patent some that dance move to get into TikTok, right? Like when we are so creative and know we can do all of this, some of us get together. You can find me, Quency, Q-U-E-N-C-Y, at LighthouseSV.com. So
say that again.
Quency, Q-U-E-N-C-Y, at Lighthouse, L-I-G-H-T-H-O-U-S-E, S as in Sam, V as in Victor, .org.
Right.
Definitely .org. So Quency at LighthouseSV.org is where you can reach me. But in 2023, moving into 2024, content is still going to be key. Skid ahead. But we do need another platform. We see what's happening with Twitter. There's a race to 2025. Mm. What's going to be the Twitter for 2025? We're getting off of Twitter, but what are we racing towards? Someone get out there. There's money. There's opportunity for you to start to ideate your process and thinking through this. That's a cheat code. We need our own, and no one has one.
And so you don't need a billion people to be successful.
You don't need a billion people. Mm. You get 10 folks. You get 10 folks, right? We've done it, and again, showing it with music. The things that happened with Mac Miller's career and all of that, that just happened up in Boston area, right? College students that understood algorithm that then overnight, Mac Miller is trending and we've never heard of him before. That took 3 colleges in the Boston area that broke that, right?
Right.
Let's think the same way. We can do some of the same stuff, short, small amounts of folks, but targeted and intentional. We feel like a choir. That choir gets heard over our one voice.
Quency Phillips, Lighthouse, Silicon Valley. We appreciate you taking time out this afternoon. One more time so people can get that cheat code of getting a hold of you.
Quency at LighthouseSV.org. Q-U-E-N-C-Y.
We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
This ain't what you want. This ain't what you want. 60 in the block. I just wanna rock. I just wanna. I just wanna rock. Body out of ya. Shorty got that body out of ya. Hit it once, no time. Side up, you gon' kill my vibe. Stand on my money, don't know my size. Pick them sides, and you better choose wisely. That's my high. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 5. That's my heart. Damn. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
MC,
this ain't what you want.
Project.
This ain't what you want. This ain't what you want.
Could have been anywhere, but fate chose Memphis, Tennessee.
the place where Martin Luther King Jr. breathed his last breath, and a musician named Elvis was crowned king. Memphis. In ancient Egypt, it was a city on the Nile. In the U.S., it's a city on the Mississippi. Now it's known as the city where a young black man, Tyree Nichols, was brutally beaten by five black cops. On camera, the five members of a so-called anti-crime unit known as the Since-Disbanded Scorpions forced the 29-year-old Nichols to exit his car while they tasered him, chased him, and literally beat him to death. Protests have erupted across America. But who really believes that real, substantial change will come? These cops had body cameras on them, but it didn't stop them from punching, kicking, tasing, and assaulting Nichols with a metal retractable baton. So much for thinking that body cameras would slow down brutality. Indeed, it didn't even deter such guys. Once again, a black man in the hands of cops, sensing impending death, calls for help from often the only person who loves him, his mother. The video of the beating is a lesson after George Floyd of how much nothing has changed. With love, not fear, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop, EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan Kim, yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone, the Bay Area zone. Hard Knock, radio, let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D. Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Yeah. Come on. Check out.
Why every novice pick they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Ain't nothing they made, they beats trying to eat, get it any from the steel grave. I'll save you a seat at the table with a great red making a speech. Say some peace to the lovers I need with a please. Hey, there's some shade on your name in the street. Let's go. Hey, it ain't David G.
Real Talk Radio.
You and I rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast.
Hard Knock Radio, East, West, North, South, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs, one love. We know where y'all at. Top, Brown Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio.
At KBOO, we accept many kinds of vehicle donations. We accept fuzzy vans, broken cars, zippy scooters, seaworthy boats, well-worn farm equipment, family-sized SUVs, old jet skis, and more. If your vehicle has a clean title, we can take it as a donation. If your vehicle isn't working, we can work with that too. Call 877-KBOO-123. That's 877-526-6123. Or go to our website, kboo.fm/vehicle.
Thank
you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 2. This February and March, you will hear different marathons and series, all brought to you by our talented programmers, including specials like Black History and Future Series. If you'd like to help KBOO reach our $17,000 goal by March 25th, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321 right now. We thank you, and you're welcome.
Connect with your favorite community radio station on social media.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/kboomradio.
And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/kboo.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kboo radio.
We also provide content to the free music archive.
An interactive library of high quality legal audio downloads.
That's at freemusicarchive.org/curator/kboo.
You can find all this and more on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
Thanks for listening.
You are listening to KBOO. Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your Portland dial, KBOO.FM on your everywhere on earth internet dial. Stay safe, stay sane, stay tuned. KBOO.